Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. When I recently heard that we were actually importing cement into this country, it kind of piqued my curiosity. Steve Krim, president of American Foundations, a project of Common Sense America, joins us to talk about that. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hi, Noel. Thank you for the opportunity to be on your show today.
Steve, this was kind of a head scratcher for me. So for the benefit of our listening audience and myself, if you could give us the background leading up to how do we get to this point where we're importing a whole bunch of cement?
That's a great question. Let me just start a little bit about a Common Sense America. We started 4 years ago with a simple goal of just bringing people together on some of the most pressing issues our country faces and promote solutions that overwhelming majority of Americans can agree on. And, you know, Americans from all walks of life can agree that when our economy is strong, America's strong. An economy, a strong American economy starts with a strong American supply chain, and there's no piece of that supply chain more fundamental than cement. You know, cement's the backbone of everything we build in this country, roads and bridges and ports, you know, schools, manufacturing facilities, and LNG terminals, data centers. You can't build any of it without cement. It's the very foundation of our supply chain, and when that's weak, our entire economy is weak. And unfortunately, we've begun to see some signs that domestic production of cement is beginning to weaken. It was down 4% last year, while demand skyrocketed. And what made up that void was foreign cement. In fact, it's making up 22% of our entire supply. And, you know, think about that. That's nearly one out of every four tons of cement used to build American infrastructures coming from overseas. Often from unstable markets like Vietnam or Morocco, Turkey, and it's an inconsistent quality and zero connection to our economic security.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it on a construction project, it begs of a whole lot of other disciplines to make sure that this product that you have, and I guess sometimes you can they mix it with domestic product or do they? And do we know what really the outcomes are?
Right. It's an issue of, you know, standards and consistency. And, you know, American cement operates under the strictest of guidelines. And I think, you know, one thing that Louisiana's faced is, you know, a lot of its infrastructure, over 1,500 bridges are rated poor or obsolete. And, you know, when that happens, when you're importing this foreign cement, it's not as stable and it's not as durable. And, you know, our policymakers need to look at that. And a way to fix it.
So what's causing this supply chain issue, or this domestic supply chain issue for us? What's behind it? Is it regulatory? Is it we're not able to make a profit on this? Or what is it?
Well, part of it, I believe, is the demand. I mean, what we're seeing is an overwhelming spike in demand for product. And while we do need to fill some of those holes, you know, our domestic production definitely can increase and needs to increase. I think it's a cut corners, possibly. It's really hard to say, but what we saw as we've been looking at the data is a decrease in overall domestic production, which is a significant concern anytime you're dealing with your supply chains, especially with something as fundamental as concrete, cement.
Well, it is the present, I mean, this is not a new phenomenon. Has the previous administration or this administration attempted to address this issue?
That's a really great question. I think it's something that's just something that we're just currently raising awareness of and really encouraging policymakers at every level to look at. I don't think it's something that really crosses their mind or has not crossed their mind in the past, but it's something that definitely needs to be looked at moving forward as we build out, you know, this kind of infrastructure renaissance that we're going through.
You know, this is not something completely foreign to us, no pun intended, but, you know, we've dealt with this issue in the seafood industry relative to seafood imports and the quality of that and how they farm seafood and some of the things that they're utilizing to increase the growth and the speed of the growth of seafood product and then bringing it over here, that we've had to deal with that issue. I wonder whether it would be worth our while to begin to look at all of the silos, and of course there are thousands upon thousands. It sounds like a lot of a big undertaking, but to gain a better understanding of where we are failing, because really when I hear this, we're failing ourselves, right?
Oh, absolutely we are. I mean, our economy is really dependent upon, you know, the American cement and a steady domestic supply. It's a national security issue. And if we're not producing our own cement, then we're depending on foreign countries for that cement. And, you know, if we have disruptions in the supply chain, it means that we can't build our critical infrastructure. You know, I think that this is an issue that the new Trump administration and its prioritizing of reshoring jobs and bringing manufacturing back to our country, I think it's something that this is just one of those big issues that we are now looking at as something that has to be addressed to ensure that we have a steady stream of domestic supply for all those needs. And, New Orleans specifically, you know, with all the infrastructure projects and the constant upgrades and everything else that they're going through to have a highly durable, strong, long-lasting domestic cement, it means less cost to taxpayers over the long run.
We're visiting with Steve Krim, President, American Foundations, a project of Common Sense America. Steve, but you have to admit that, I mean, it's almost weekly, we hear about a phenomenon kind of similar to this about, you know, supply chain challenges that we have and our reliance on imports and, you know, in our trade imbalance. I mean, we hear it about China almost every day.
Absolutely. Yes, Neil, 100%. It's an issue that Common Sense America has been really eyeing for the better part of 4 years, you know, and specifically with China. We really got started on this issue on the critical minerals aspect of it, you know, because we were so reliant critical with like lithium batteries and everything else, and we just couldn't mine it here in the U.S. And we started asking the hard question, why? And, you know, what we don't want to see is, and the reason why was because we weren't doing it here. We just weren't able to pull the material out of the ground. And, you know, what we're seeing now is with the domestic cement supply is, you know, as we're offshoring this material and bringing it back from foreign sources, we're losing we're going to start losing our manufacturing facilities here, and that's why we want to alert, and that's why we've launched StrongAmericanFoundations.org as a project, is, you know, to make sure that we guard against the threat of losing more and more of our domestic manufacturing capability for cement.
Steve, I know folks like yourself have been around a long time that are kind of watching these, what I'm going to refer to as these nuances, right? Do we really believe that our federal government is set up in such a fashion that we can, that we're nimble enough and that we're forward thinking enough to really deal with these issues?
I believe that we're becoming so. I mean, I will say that this administration has definitely renewed its focus on this type of issue. I believe that they're doing a really good job of creating a national priority. And I think that that's what's been lacking for so long. It's, we were always concerned more about the end product rather than the manufacturing process. And we were okay with the idea of manufacturing overseas or bringing in the raw material. And, you know, I think this administration in its efforts to bring back the manufacturing, and it's, you know, what we've seen as far as investments overall in various, you know, critical mineral development and that sort of thing is a renewed focus and a long-term vision of how we need to compete at the global market. And just sure, our domestic supply chain is strong, because without a strong domestic supply chain, it's very difficult to compete globally. And that's why, again, like I said, like we're so focused on the cement issue, since it's the material that's used in everything, every infrastructure project and every building material, residential, commercial, doesn't matter. Cement's utilized. That's the second most utilized material in construction.
Yeah, and it should be fairly obvious to us, right? Because we have had a recent happenstance where we've had this over-reliance on imports, and just talking about the pharmaceutical industry, with what we went through during the pandemic and the supply chain issues, that we recognize that we were really at a significant disadvantage because of, we parched out an entire sector of the pharmaceutical industry and put it in someone else's hands.
Right. Not just pharmaceuticals, others. And what we don't want to do is we want to make sure that we stop that practice, right? We learned that specifically from pharmaceuticals, that it hurts our overall economy. And it's no way, we actually don't end up with a cost savings. So, you know, that's why, again, like I said, like that's why we're so focused on this cement. You know, and a strong supply chain means a strong American economy, and importing materials weakens the state of our overall economy.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about something as basic as like antibiotics, right? Mm-hmm. The utilization in this country, and I think everybody was kind of blindsided by the revelation that we don't control that sector of the pharmaceutical business. China does. It's like, what?
Right. Yeah.
Since when? Yeah, when did that happen?
Yeah, and then what you see is you see kind of the intellectual side moving to other countries, right? So the brain trust, or there's a brain drain from our country to other countries when it comes to pharmaceuticals, or when it comes to other issues, including, you know, cement. You know, if there's no demand for manufacturing here and we're importing it all, then we start to lose that knowledge base of building highly, you know, highly durable, long-lasting cement. So, you know, this is kind of the canary in the coal mine. We're seeing this drop in production of cement, and we wanted to raise awareness of it as quickly as we possibly could and really focus in on it so that our policymakers can see it and start developing some policies that can prevent the further offshoring of our cement supply.
What is the potential gross sales amount of cement in this country annually? I mean, it's got to be a huge number.
It is. It's in the billions. It's in the billions. I mean, we're talking about 600,000 jobs just for Louisiana alone. It's $100 million in annual payroll and 2,500 jobs. And you extrapolate that out to the rest of the country, I think we're looking at you know, billions and billions of dollars.
Yeah, I mean, it, and it's amazing because it's in a, you know, they're they're good paying jobs, and obviously we've been upside down in Louisiana, so this has a significant impact for us.
It does. And, you know, Louisiana is kind of on the, you know, forefront right now of some economic growth, some really exciting new projects, you know, coming down the pipeline as far as, you know, data centers are concerned and some new energy production. And then the LNG going on in Southwest Louisiana, the exports of that. And that all depends on high quality, durable cement.
Yeah. It's interesting. You would think that we would want to take care of our cement producers here. Maybe, you know, if there's going to be some enormous as opposed to the importation. I mean, I don't profess to understand all of the macroeconomics of this, but I like controlling my destiny.
Right. And the way you do that is with your domestic supply chain, right?
It's, yeah. I get that, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just in my own little micro world and managing my budget at home, I like controlling my destiny and having some say so.
Right. Yeah. It really is the fundamental basis of any strong economy. So,
yeah.
When you control your destiny, you can grow and you can build and you can do the things necessary to take care of your people.
That's what I love about being a radio talk show host. Every day there's a revelation and a head scratcher for me, and you try to figure out what are we doing? What,
right.
You know, how did we get to where we are?
It hopefully doesn't keep you up too much at night either.
No. Thankfully not. I'm not there. I'd probably be jumping off a bridge, but
made with American cement.
There you go. One that's going to be right. Good and sturdy. Steve Krim, exactly. Thank you so much for joining us. President American Foundations, a project of Common Sense America. Truly appreciate you bringing this issue forward. It's one I never expected to hear, but here it is.
Yes. Thank you, Noel. I appreciate it.
Yes. Yet another challenge. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
Hi, DSW, Birthplace of the Humble Brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vien and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes Of, a Crime House Original.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council member, District A, and the head of the Budget Committee for the New Orleans City Council as well. And Joe, we truly appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to join us, and welcome.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me, Noel.
So, Joe, just when I thought that we had learned everything we needed to know about what was going on with the JIRR program in the city of New Orleans, I was watching an interview with the legislative auditor and the mayor-elect, Helena Moreno, and things continued to reveal themselves.
Yes, they do. And I think, look, I think it's a reasonable question to be asking at this point about what was happening. And essentially what we've learned is that general fund dollars were being used as part of this program. Capital fund dollars were being used for this program. And for your listeners, the JIR program is the Joint Infrastructure Recovery Road Program, which is the internal name for the FEMA dollars that flowed to the city for Hurricane Katrina. And it's a pay-as-you-go program, which means that you do the work and you get reimbursed for the work, showing the invoices to the federal government. And look, the whole thing is we know cash is king and that you have to pay your invoices. I think what needs to be dug down to now is two separate parts. We kind of need a post-mortem about how we got here and what happens with using both general fund and capital dollars to front the money for joint infrastructure. And another piece, Newell, is the program ends at the end of December. So what are we doing going forward with that? And the mayor-elect and I actually talked about that this morning. We're supposed to have a meeting this week with a legislative auditor and the internal team about that. And we obviously want to make sure that as we're approaching the end of the program for the time being, we know how that's going to be handled.
So, you know, I want to try and be as fair as I can be to the Cantrell administration. So when they came in 8 years ago now, the vast majority of these dollars had not been spent, right?
Correct.
And so they started playing catch up. And one of the things that was revealed in the interview with David Hammer the other day that was, in fairness to them, in the first couple, 2, maybe 3 years that they engaged upon this program, working out this arrangement with FEMA, of FEMA fronting dollars and the like, things were kind of rolling along fairly well. Would that be a fair characterization?
And that's my understanding. And look, for all the years that we got it before this year, we were unaware of any cash flow problems attributable to spending money for FEMA work that's been cascaded to elsewhere.
Right. So I guess, you know, the postmortem that you're talking about is really important because it's kind of like strategically, where did you decide to do something differently? I mean, and why did, you know, as a steward in the fiduciary obligation that the CFO and the COO and those folks have, you know, of managing these general fund dollars, it seems that just kind of went right out the window.
It doesn't make sense. And the only, and this is a guess right now, the only thing I can guess is that, again, they are worried about trying to get work done, get things moving as quickly as possible, get as much work on the streets as possible, trying to do everything they can to get that extension. And again, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt. I don't think it was done with malice in their hearts or with the intent of hurting vendors or employees, but I think they may have gotten over their skis and put too much general fund and other dollars on the streets and then got caught when bills became due, things became final, and the money wasn't being returned as quickly. Now, that is a guess, and again, I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt and acting in good faith, and we'll get to the bottom of that and see how we got here.
So roughly a little bit over a week ago, when a lot of these revelations were coming to the forefront, there was this thought process that if we can accelerate the reimbursement process from the state to the city on what was fronted by the city, we might be in better shape. Where does that stand today? Or where does that thought process stand today?
Yeah, we've got to figure all that out, and Newell, I'll make some news here right now. I have filed a motion ordinance that I think all of my colleagues are co-authors on that basically stops any city spending except for the things that we owe per the legislative auditor, because we don't have that insight right now. And we want to make sure as dollars are flowing back into the city that they're flowing back out the right way. And again, in my view, it's about, hey, what are the vendors that are mission critical at this moment for public safety, whether that's lights or picking up the trash or other things. And we just can't have the money sucked sideways going all over. And so we are trying to wrap our arms around all of that. And again, part of the purpose of the meeting this week is to understand sort of where we are. And again, as importantly, where we're going, particularly because the program stops at the end of the year.
And because I guess the biggest portion of your general fund dollars that come in are property taxes, right? And that will be due at the end of January, but you will start receiving some of those collections before the mayor-elect takes office on January 12th.
Correct. And look, for your listening audience, one of the things I was curious about is those dollars do not just go out the door. They are obligated, as I understand it, against the revenue anticipatory note, so they can't just be sucked sideways and go do other things. But yes, the beginning of the year, the biggest sum of money to come in is from the payment of property taxes. And we've obviously had a lot of New Orleanians who have said, I'm willing to pay my property taxes early. If this helps the city and its financial state, I want to do it. And you and I think what was with the mayor-elect, discussed off the microphones about the idea that banks want to pay the money earlier to the city. So as soon as we can get those dollars flowing, that will be really important. And obviously, we want to make sure we understand how everything is working, because we need to dig ourselves out of where we are.
Do you know whether or not the assessor has sent over the tax rolls to the city finance department in order to generate the property tax bills?
I don't know that for sure. I know that we asked about that a little while ago, but I don't want to get the answer wrong, Newell. I don't want to say the
right.
wrong thing.
No, so it's fine. No, I mean, it is or it ain't. I mean, you right. know, one or the other. Right. If it's been sent or not. So that's kind of the JIRR thing when we talk about the budget and what was ultimately adopted by the city council. I know that y'all had to do some workarounds because of the lack of cooperation, I guess, from Mayor Cantrell herself in trying to, you know, do things in a way that makes it a lot more easier and to continue into the this transfer of power from one to the other. It just didn't seem to be her bailiwick at this point in time. So where do we stand there?
Well, the council has passed the budget that the mayor-elect proposed. And I said before Helena got elected or anybody else, my personal view was that whoever the next mayor was ought to have an outsized role in doing this. And we move forward with what was proposed. I know Mayor-elect Moreno walked through on your show, I think, kind of two really important things. One was the fact that generally the Cantrell budget, except for a couple of departments, cut many things just across the board by 20 or 30%. And Mayor-elect Moreno went back and tried to do things more surgically and give other departments, particularly safety and permits and DPW, more funds than had been in there before. And then obviously, as you're alluding to, we recognized more revenue than was in the Cantrell budget too. And that was a result of Mayor-elect Moreno, the team really digging in and using a lot of information we got from the city. It's not like we just dreamed these things up. It was from the transition committee work that we did, talking with department heads, looking for those funds. And the broad categories were monies that were due from the Sewage and Water Board, money that we are getting from WISNR either this year or next year, returning ARPA funds that have either just been underused or underutilized, and then some better enforcement work when it comes to collection for parking. And again, that's going to spark the next conversation about how we do a better job of collections writ large. And I know you and I've had many conversations, particularly on the sales tax front. But the important piece is, instead of having to be so egregious with cutting, that extra $75 million gave more breathing room. And we wanted to recognize that to really help as much as we can. And there's going to be pain in all of this. I think we've all said that repeatedly. But at the same time, the ways we can alleviate pain and do what's in the best interest is what makes the most sense.
Yeah, you know, it's as we get closer and closer to the date of January 12th and coming in, I mean, it's amazing how many critical decisions early onset that the entire Moreno administration, I know you're going to be the CAO incoming, and congratulations to you for that, but a lot of critical decisions are going to be made in the first 5 to 10 days that you're in office.
Yeah, and look, it's been interesting because I feel like a lot of times we're getting asked, and the mayor-elect Moreno is getting asked about what are all the plans. And what I keep on telling people is past is prologue. Like, look at the fact that we got the revenue anticipatory note in large part because of the mayor-elect and Councilmember Morrell. Look at the fact that the budget got examined so quickly with a small but mighty team that punched above its weight. Look at the fact that they found this extra revenue. And it's going to be harnessing that type of energy to move forward. I mean, one thing I've learned about working with Helena for the last 8 years and now 4 is she pretty much has one speed, and that's 5. And you better keep up with it while they go along. And I think it's really important to keep that energy level up because we're, in my view, trying to do two things, Newell, which is both structurally redo this, so that way the city is not having these problems on a recurring basis, but at the same time improve the morale, the way that people feel. Both of those things simultaneously are really important.
What do you see as one of the biggest challenges, not from the financial perspective? I think we've all kind of beat that horse to death, and you know, and everybody's aware of where we find ourselves, but operationally, you know, as you've interacted more and more and more in kind of a little bit of a different capacity of thinking, you know, of what you're going to be responsible for in the very near future, your thoughts?
Well, look, this is going to be in the weeds, but I do think it's really important is trying to get procurement to work a lot faster. For people who are in the business world, you sort of go at the speed of light, that's where things can get bogged down very quickly because for contracts, you have to put them out so people can bid on them. You have to get them back. Then you have to draft the contractual documents. Then they have to go through these layers of approval. And I think one of the things that really is important to streamline is to make sure that process goes so much faster. And then, Noel, I guess sort of number two along the same lines for I think the administration is also trying to make sure that where you have things that are revenue generating, we make them as easy as possible. You know, you hear about departments where things linger or take too long, or there just isn't the enforcement like there needs to be. And so those processes need to go faster too. So my view is it's about making things that make the city better, that make operations better, sometimes not as exciting, but if you can get things where procurement can move significantly faster and it's not languishing in one department or another, you get better vendors, you get more people bidding, you get things done more quickly, and it shows people the city's open for business.
And the reality may be that you're going to have to do that with less people, right, than what's being employed by the city now.
I mean, yeah,
you know, when I just kind of do back of the envelope calculations at 5,000 employee base, and I don't know where all of that is made up, if that includes Sewage and Water Board or not. I was led to believe that it didn't, but if it does, it kind of changes it a little bit. But I don't know that the city is in a position to afford that many employees.
I think that's something that we're going to have to consistently examine. And obviously, I know the mayor-elect Moreno has done a few things. Number one is trimming almost 40 unclassified employees just from day one, not hiring most non-critical employees. Obviously, if there's police recruits or laborers for DPW, those type of folks we want to bring in, and limiting probationary employees. And that's, again, just to start. And look, I think there's going to have to be a very strong sense of doing things in a culture shift way. And by that, I mean, you can't manage what you can't measure. So what are we doing? What do the outputs look like? What are the total amount of people that we really need? What is the return that residents are seeing on the dollars that are being spent? And then how do you focus those efforts primarily on those public safety functions that are so critical?
Joe, I think you would agree, because you and I have talked about this both publicly and in private, you know, the implementation and utilization of technology within the organization. A lot of times the rollout has been sloppy at best, and the return on those investments have not been appropriate or what the expectation, or failed to meet the expectations. Your thoughts about moving forward there?
Yeah, and look, for some of us, Newell, this is going to be brave new world. I'm almost 50 and not as adept at my kids, but if we can use AI to make things move faster and take information and crunch it, then great. At the same time, how do we take basic systems and make them easier for people to use? How do we make functionality easier for people to use? I got this wrong last time, either I was on your show or on Tommy, but there's a process right now where I think to pay fines and fees on certain things that you owe, you actually have to come to City Hall with a check. Now, in the year of our Lord 2025, when I can deposit checks on my phone sitting at my house, the fact that we make it hard for people to do the thing just does not make sense. So I think there has to be almost a ruthless consistency about how do you make things that are systems easier both internally for our employees, and then how do you make it easier for the public as well?
Yeah, no doubt, for sure. Well, we appreciate you joining us today. A lot of different issues going on, none more important than obviously finance and operations as we get closer to January 12th, the day that Helena Moreno will be sworn in. And so we thank you for the opportunity to talk about these topics with you today.
Thanks, Noel. Take care.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Lines.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vienne and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes Of, a Crime House original.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes Of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay with us. We've got a few minutes, so let's go to the talk lines. David in San Francisco, what say you?
Well, thanks. Well, you know, I get the shivers up my spine when I heard the guest talking about transferring the duties of the city over to AI. The city and government is supposed to be set up for the benefit
That's
of
not
the
what
people.
He said, David. He said if they could utilize AI in order to create more ease of administration in some of their collection efforts or otherwise, then they might have a willingness to do so.
Well, there's expensive mistakes, and I can imagine lawsuits coming from two expensive mistakes. And you, as a former sheriff, I was wanting to ask you about this anyway. These ICE guys coming into town with a mask on, does the sheriff or have the ability to make sure that every one of those are ID'd before they go on the streets?
No.
Imagine the lawsuits about having some masked guys come into town with no coverage by the local sheriff and just allowed to start doing the stuff they're doing up in Chicago, L.A., and the
David, this is done every day by law enforcement across this country, both state, local, and feds. The FBI, the DEA, and others are in here all the time. And our joint task forces, whether it be JTTF, the Joint Terrorism Task Force, or Joint Narcotics Investigations, there are masked officers all the time, especially those that are in an undercover capacity where their identity is not to be revealed. And more often than not, when the target of the operation is a gang, especially a affiliated gang with cartels, it's not unusual to wear masks because these folks are doxing these officers, they're doxing their families, they're putting their lives at risk. I don't know about you, but I'm willing to accept the fact that they're wearing a mask for the protection of not only them, as well as their families.
The lawsuits are coming up because the lawsuits to the taxpayers of New Orleans for allowing unidentified people.
Most of those lawsuits are being dismissed. I mean, the persons you ought to be aggravated with are the activists, not the law enforcement agency.
You're for big government. It's not even government.
Is it big government to have immigration and customs enforcement?
Are there pirates pretending to be ICE?
They're pirates pretending to be deputies all the time. We arrest those people all the time.
When an entity brings in 500 guys, does the sheriff have the ability to bring them into a room, ID them, fingerprint them, and get them established to be working the streets?
Of course not. That's ridiculous. I mean, I have FBI. When I was a sheriff, I had FBI agents, DEA agents, ATF agents, IRS agents. postal inspectors all having criminal enforcement capabilities in my jurisdiction daily. Not in my wildest dreams did I ever think it was necessary to call these people in. And in many cases, including Border Patrol, including ICE, have more training, more extensive training than local law enforcement. It's a ridiculous observation. I don't mean to be aggressive in that nature, but this is part of the problem of what we're perpetuating out there in the public right now is craziness. And we're attacking ourselves. We can't hire people now. How much harder do you think it is when we're out there perpetuating these urban myths about what's actually going on? Complaining that we're taking in folks that have deportation orders issued by an immigration judge. That's why in my monologue I covered all of this as it relates to Democratic administration, Republican administration. This is goofy. I mean, it's absolutely goofy. Do we have Scoot? Oh, got to get to a break. I'm sorry. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.